I'm Dr. Marcia, and you're listening to the Self-Care Chronicle. As a licensed psychologist, I know the importance of self-care in maintaining my mental wellness. But I'm often pretty busy running around trying to help others navigate their way through life. And when my schedule gets really hectic, I struggle with self-care. The very self-care that I always recommend to other people. And that made me wonder, am I the only one? How do other mental health professionals handle their self-care? So I reached out to a bunch of my peers and asked them if they would talk to me about their experiences. Join me each week as I chat with a fellow mental health professional about stress management and self-care. Welcome to the Self-Care Chronicle. Hello and welcome. It is episode 10 of the Self-Care Chronicle. I'm Dr. Marcia, and today I'm chatting with Dr. Jasmine R. Burton. Dr. Burton is a licensed psychologist and the founder of Essence Psychological Health Services, an organization with a mission to provide culturally and gender-appropriate psychological services to women, children, and families. Dr. Burton's work is impacting countless women in the community. So after the show, find out more about her amazing work at drmarciabrown.com. Let's get right to it. And welcome, Dr. Burton. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It is a pleasure. First, I want to talk a little bit about your journey into your current position. So what I mean by that is why psychology, why you chose to be a psychologist, and then how you got to serving the population that you currently work with.
Yeah, that's a great question. Honestly, I feel like I was placed on this path naturally. I think I got it honest because I was reared by a family of caregivers. So my mom is a social worker. I have teachers in my family, nurses in my family. So growing up in a family of caregivers, it was instilled in me that work that we should do should be for the service of our community. So that was something that was really important to me and just really a value that was instilled in me. In addition to that, growing up in the Bronx, New York, in a very diverse community, but in a community of amongst people that were struggling, a natural question that always came up for me was, what were the factors that contributed to people's resilience? While I grew up in a community where there are many people that were struggling in terms of poverty, in terms of a lot of disadvantages that were apparent in my community, I saw a lot of people thriving and striving. So I was just really curious about people's behaviors and the factors that led to resilience. I think that put me on the path to psychology. And I was an undergrad. I majored in psychology because that was where my natural curiosity led me. But I also minored in Africana studies and sociology. So just the merging of those three educational exposures that really did put me on a path to really focus primarily on the impact of racial and gendered oppression, specifically on Black women. And my interest in Black women came from me being a Black woman, being around a lot of Black women, and just, again, being curious about resilience and just understanding how historically Black women have faced so much oppression and just wondering how we can experience so much oppression and continue to thrive. And so what were those factors that contributed to our resilience, but also having a better understanding of what the historical factors that we were experiencing that made life hard, but that we were also able to wrestle with and in many ways overcome. That led me to a really narrowed focus on Black women's mental health. And when I decided to open up my own practice in 2014, I made that an explicit focus of my practice. So currently, I serve women, children, and family. The majority of my caseload are women. The majority of those women are women of color. And I love it because, again, it gives me all of those things that I've always been curious about, the things that I would love to do, all in one place. And I think it's pretty neat work to be doing.
Absolutely. That's really interesting. And it's such important work. Can you talk about what the most stressful thing is about your job?
I'd have to say that the most stressful component for me now is just the role stress. So in addition to being a psychologist, I am a mom. I'm a mom of a four-year-old. And in particular, during the pandemic, the role of being a psychologist has many times been in conflict with my role of being a mom because my daughter's at home. And so I'm wearing the hat of homeschooling, deciding how I can show up and be the best mom that I can be while also showing up for my clients that are in intense need. That's definitely been a challenge. So definitely trying to negotiate what work looks like in this context, in this time, has definitely been a great challenge.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. You said that a lot of what is most stressful about your job right now is just the role stress of having to juggle motherhood as well as owning and running your own private practice. I'd like to go back for a second and talk a little bit about prior to COVID-19, what did you find the most stressful thing about your job to be?
I have to say, prior to COVID, the most stressful part of my job was the demand. And I think that is largely because my practice is a niche practice, right? It has a very narrow focus, serving a specific population. And so because of that, the demand for the services can be very high. And me being a natural caregiver, wanting to be able to serve as many people as possible, my desire to meet the need is always going to be there. And so the challenge is for me definitely setting some boundaries with how much work I can do at any one time, how many people I can see, and how many people would have to be on a waiting list, how many people I'd have to refer out, and just understanding that I can't meet everyone's need at one time. I can definitely try my best, but realistically, there are going to be some people that I'm not going to be able to see at any given moment, especially if the demand is just extremely high. So definitely trying to navigate, okay, what is going to be the maximum number of people that I can see and continue to do the things that I need to do to be able to engage in self-care. And so figuring out what that number is and sticking to that number, because it is so easy to take on more than we can handle, take on more than would be good for us. But really understanding over the years that if I do that, if I try to meet this need with so many people, then what is going to be the sacrifice that I'm making to do that? And oftentimes the sacrifice is not one that is going to be in my best interest and ultimately in the best interest of my clients. Because if I'm burnt out and overwhelmed, I'm not going to be good to anyone. So definitely trying to figure out what is going to be the maximum number of people that I take and then how I can support those people that I can't see in that moment to find someone else that can help them and support them at that time.
And that's so relatable, that idea of just being in a caregiving profession and having so many people with a need and just being one person and not being able to address the needs of everyone. And also just the idea of, you said it, I think, beautifully, the idea of if I'm running myself into the ground, how much am I really going to be able to help and be there for the people that I'm serving? So I think that's a really great point. So you said the most stressful thing about your job before COVID was just the sheer demand and the need, because as you said, you are such a niche practice and really filling a void that doesn't get talked about a whole lot. So you talked about the demand was the most stressful prior to COVID. And then you talked about once COVID hit, it really was just that struggle to juggle roles of motherhood as well as running your practice. Can you talk a little bit about how COVID-19 actually changed your practice itself, if it did change it?
Yeah, so it definitely changed my practice. Prior to COVID, I saw most of my clients face-to-face. And then once COVID happened, many of my clients were working from home. I was working from home much of the time. So I shifted my practice to being about 95% virtual. So even now, I'm still seeing people via telehealth. Occasionally, I'll have a telephone session, but primarily, I'm not seeing anyone face-to-face. Now, I will see some individuals in certain circumstances where it's not in their best interest for us to be seeing each other virtually. In those instances, I'll see them face-to-face. That's been the greatest shift that I've made, is to be providing the service virtually.
As a clinician, was there any kind of adjustment period for you in switching from face-to-face to telehealth? Was there any kind of adjustment in that way for you in terms of connection with clients, feeling the ability to build rapport? Was there anything like that?
I think thankfully I had already started utilizing telehealth services prior to COVID for clients that were out of town, but they couldn't meet in person. So in terms of the learning curve with the technology, I felt like I had gotten over those speed bumps already. But because I was shifting the majority of my clientele to virtual, I think the biggest challenge was talking to them about the process and talking to them about the differences and normalizing for them the frustrations, because they could be trying to talk to me about something that is really personal, really painful. And then there's a lag in the internet with connection. And so just talking to them and being honest with them about the frustrations that I was experiencing just with the technology at points and making it okay for them to talk about it. I think that initially was the biggest challenge just because of the number of people that I had to have that conversation with. But now that we've been doing it for about 9 months now, most of my clients, they're good with it. I'm good with it. We show each other grace for the issues that we have with our devices being wonky or the internet connection not being great or them having to at times meet in their cars because it doesn't feel like they'll have the privacy that they need in the home. I think the biggest challenge was just having the conversation about this is different and that doesn't feel great. This is adding definitely a layer of support that we do together, but how can we acknowledge it and not allow it to continue to be a barrier to the work? So having that conversation, I think, definitely helped us to get over that hump and be able to then engage in work that they feel to be effective, productive, and ultimately meaningful.
That makes sense. Absolutely. And you hit on this a few minutes ago when you talked about just the realization that you had that there's only one you. Although the demand is great, you can only serve so many people at a time and there's going to have to be a waiting list. Can you talk a little bit about self-care for you, how you're able to practice it? What's your go-to method? How are you able to make sure that you are in optimum condition to be able to serve this very important population?
Well, self-care for me is always in flux, particularly in this year. So one of the things that I've tried to take, the approach that I tried to take in being more flexible about self-care and what it looks like, is I definitely try to take an intuitive approach. So I definitely try to tune into myself and ask myself, what is it that I need right now? And that's an important question for me because a lot of the things that I used to turn to prior to COVID for self-care are no longer available. Those things are not options for me. So I try to take a very intuitive approach. Some of my go-tos here recently have definitely been yoga, remaining connected to my family and friends via telephone, FaceTime, Zoom, prayer and meditation, just trying to figure out things that spark joy for me. Those are things that I've just definitely been leaning on. But from day to day, the thing that is going to qualify as self-care is going to change just because so much of our life is in flux. So if I had this prescribed list of self-care activities and tried to stick to it, I don't think that would be realistic for me just because so much of my life is changing. So much of our lives are just so unpredictable. So I do try to take a more intuitive approach about, okay, what is it that would help me to feel grounded, centered, and whole in this particular moment. And I try to do that.
I think that's a great point because all of our lives are in flux. And I think you mentioned flexibility and the idea of just being able to, in the moment, what do I need right now? I don't know about you, but for me, if I don't put it in my calendar, it doesn't matter what it will be, but I have to put something in my calendar. Otherwise, it's just not going to get done. Are you really good at just being able to read yourself and know in the moment, wait a second, I need to stop for a minute and start to take care of myself, and then I'll come back to whatever I'm doing? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I definitely am more of an in the moment person. I've never been one of those folks that is really bound to a schedule. So me trying to plan it or schedule it, that's never been my thing. I just try to feel it. So I can feel when I'm feeling a little bit off. I can feel when I'm a little cranky or irritable. And so in those moments, I say, okay, ooh, I'm a little cranky. Do I need sleep? Do I need to stretch a little bit? Would feel good for me in this moment. And then I try to do something then and there. Because if I say, okay, I'm feeling off, I need to schedule it for this time, I might not get to it because things are always coming up for me. So I do try to just recognize what I'm feeling in that moment and try to get something quick. Even if it's listening to a song really quickly, even if it's having an impromptu dance party with my daughter, I'm going to do something in the moment, something that's easy and accessible that can help me in that space, in that time, because I need to do it in that moment. And I don't always have the time to sit down and say, okay, I need to schedule this for tomorrow to get that thing done, because tomorrow it may not happen because I have something else that has come up. So I definitely try to be in the moment when I'm assessing the need and then doing something to address it.
That's really great. You really have to be in tune with your body, with your mind, with your emotions to be able to say in the moment, I feel off or whatever that is. So it sounds like you're very in tune with yourself and you can notice just small changes in the way that you usually are to say, okay, let's do an assessment right now and figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's definitely something that has been growing over the course of this year. With me homeschooling my daughter, she's almost a feedback system for me. So if I'm feeling cranky and irritable, she can pick up on that, and that's reflected in her behavior. So I'm like, okay, wait a minute, something's off here. And so I can recognize it in myself. I can recognize it in her. And so in seeing that, I'm saying, okay, I need to make some adjustments. I need to make some shifts. One, so that I can be well. But two, so that I can be most responsive to her and model for her how she can manage her emotions when she's off as well.
And can you say a little bit about your biggest challenges in terms of making sure that the self-care gets done? I know that you said you're incredibly busy and you always have something or another popping up or something that needs to be done. You've got mommy duties, and during the pandemic, you're suddenly a full-time teacher as well. What are the things, aside from all that, that are making it very challenging to make sure that self-care gets done on a regular basis?
Yeah, I just think it's all of the things. And so prioritizing self-care, giving myself permission to engage in self-care when all of the things need to be done. And so I think as women and as moms, we're socialized that your children come first. Their needs are the priority. It's almost selfish to do something for yourself. And so I have to always shift my thinking and challenge that thinking and say, no, me taking care of myself is beneficial to my daughter. One, it's giving me what I need to show up for her. It's modeling for her how she can take care of herself. So often I'm having to just fight against these ideas that say that I'm not supposed to be taking care of myself. The same is true in my role as a psychologist. So there's always someone that might be sending me a message saying, do you have any other slots? Can you fit me in? Can you do something? And there may be days where I could tack another person onto a 9 or 10 hour day, but is that going to be in my best interest? Am I caring for myself by adding to my load? And so I have to say, as to be the type of psychologist I want to be, it's going to require that I take care of myself. And sometimes that means saying no. So the biggest challenge of engaging in self-care is oftentimes prioritizing self-care and reminding myself that is going to be something that is important.
Absolutely. And that's such a good point. The idea that as women, we're taught that our children come first. And really, as women, we're taught that everyone else comes first. Also, just in our culture here in the US, we're also taught that busyness and sleep deprivation are badges of honor. And that we should be busy. And if we're getting enough sleep, or we're not frazzled or running around like a chicken with its head cut off, then obviously we're not working hard enough. And obviously there's something wrong. And I think you're spot on when you say there's that need to shift the mindset to realize, who is that really helping?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that is such a valuable thing for women to engage in. I think that every time a woman can do something for herself, she's going to be a benefit to her family, to everyone that she interacts with. And so I think that it's definitely a shift. We have to flip on its head this idea that you are showing up as a good woman when you're putting everyone else first. No, you're showing up and being the best woman that you possibly can be when you're prioritizing your needs, because then you know that you're full, that you're satisfied, that you have what you need, and then you can give from your surplus to others. And that's a challenging idea, but I think it's a worthwhile idea for us to definitely try to work towards and aspire to, in order to just live better for ourselves so that we can support other people and them living better for themselves.
I think those are really excellent points. I was just wondering if you talked a little bit about some of the things that you like to do that replenish your stores, which is now the yoga, meditation, prayer, connections with family. What is the role of connecting with other mental health professionals? Is that something that you see as beneficial? Is it something that you're able to do? Can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Some of my dearest friends are psychologists and other members of the mental health field. And I think it's so important and so rewarding because it can normalize our experience. Because I think that while people that aren't in the field can definitely understand the challenges that we experience, unless you've lived it, it's hard to really get it. And talking with my really close friend, who's also a psychologist, we just talk often about how it's challenging and how it's rewarding, or how we felt like we haven't had much of a break during the pandemic. Or we say, hey, I just did this intervention, you should try this, or I just read that book, And so there's opportunity for us to definitely hone our skills in talking to one another. There's definitely opportunity to vent and normalize the frustrations and challenges that we experience. But it is something that I find extremely valuable, particularly in this time, but at all times, to be able to connect with people that are in the field, that are just in the trenches with you.
Yeah, I think that's very valuable. I like that you said that it's helpful to connect with someone who just gets it and just understands when we are done with a day of just back to back going through the journey with somebody of struggles or whatever's going on, something that's very taxing or emotional or impactful. It's nice to be able to connect with somebody who just understands being in that place. Because I think for some people, it just sounds like we just talk to people all day. And what's so tiring about that? Nothing. You're just sitting talking all day. But really, another mental health professional would understand what it's like in the room and how taxing it can be on us.
For certain. Because if you think about what we do, we bear witness to people's pain and we hold a space for them. And while I think it's, for me, I'm biased, but I think it's one of the most rewarding jobs that you can do, it's also one of the most challenging because you're doing that for multiple people back to back while you're also dealing with your own stuff in your own life. So you're holding the space for people, you're understanding their pain, you're taking a non-judgmental stance, you're doing all of those things, and you're a human being that is doing all of those things. So I think that can be very taxing, very tiring. And so to be able to talk to someone that understands it, right, I think is very important. I think one of the things that my dear friend does for me is she holds me accountable for, okay, what are you doing for yourself? Are you taking some steps back? Mm-hmm. And so I think that is really important. You need that, whether that be through a consultation group, whether that be a peer that you're close with or a homegirl that's in the field. I think that just having someone that plays that role for you is extremely important because the work that we do is hard.
It is. Absolutely. That's so helpful to hear just how you're managing, doing it all, keeping things together. Can you talk a little bit more about your practice, how people can find you?
Sure. So Essence Psychological Health Services is located in Bel Air, Texas. Bel Air is a small little area right outside Houston. So I serve the Houston area. And my practice serves women, children, and family with a particular emphasis on trauma and loss, grief, and reproductive challenges. And so you can find us at epsychhealth.com on social media. So on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, we're at epsychhealth. That's E-P-S-Y-C-H-E-A-L-T-H. And in terms of the exciting things that are happening at Essence Psychological Health Services, I'm in the process of expanding. I'm really looking for dynamic clinicians, both master's level and doctoral level clinicians that have a really passion and interest in serving women, children, and families. So if you have that background, training, and credentials, please feel free to contact me via the website and we can talk more about what those opportunities will look like.
That's awesome. That is fantastic. Thank you so much for being here, for taking the time to chat with me. You've offered so much valuable information and given a glimpse into how you take care of yourself. Because I think that, as you stated, it's so helpful to have other mental health professionals to bounce things off of, to hear, what are you doing? What are the things that are helping you? And you can, you know, take the things that you want, take the things that you think would help you, maybe try some new things, and then find your own self-care routine whenever you can. So thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. I think that your podcast is phenomenal. I think self-care for mental health practitioners is something that we preach about, but we don't always do the best job of doing that for ourselves. So I think it's phenomenal that you have this forum in which we can talk about how we take care of ourselves as we're taking care of others.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And for the very last thing, it's something I used to call the lightning round, but now I just call it the finisher because it's the finishing question. It has nothing to do with psychology or self-care, but since I'm interested in people, I just ask a random question. So for you, I was just wondering, what are the top three destinations on your travel bucket list?
Oh, I got it. Bali.
Bali, okay.
I definitely want to go to Bali. I was supposed to go to Bali last October, but COVID said otherwise. I definitely want to go to South Africa, and I want to go to the Ivory Coast.
Oh, nice. Okay, those are really awesome places. Now, are these just places that you want to see because they're, you know, beautiful, and I've never been to any of them, but I've heard amazing things about all of them? Or is there something specific that you want to get to see or study while you're there?
You know, I just feel drawn there. And so I try to, again, trying to be in tune to things. There are places that I'm just drawn there. I don't have any particular reasons why. I don't know why, but my soul, my spirit, yeah, I feel like it's pulling me there. So for that reason alone, I want to go and explore those places and just remain open to whatever lessons it has to teach me.
Fantastic. And those are really cool places. I hope that you get to go very soon.
Thank you. I hope so as well.
All right. Thank you so much again for being here, and you take care.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for joining me for the Self-Care Chronicle. If you liked this episode, please pass it along to someone else who might enjoy it. To find out more about today's episode or listen to additional episodes, visit drmarshabrown.com and click on Deconstructing Stress. That's drmarshabrown.com and click on Deconstructing Stress. See you next time.